Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. This is your host, Matthias Wadner, along with Will Lomas, and we're going to bring you some of the best bits of information that have been coming out ever since the Titans started training camp last week. There's been a lot of positive reports, thankfully. Thankfully, not too many negative reports, which is exactly what you want to hear. You want to hear the good stuff that's coming out from the team and about the players. So it's definitely something that Titans fans should be excited about because there's a lot of good news out there. So that's where we're going to discuss mostly on the podcast. But before we do that, I wanted to hit a little bit on some of the breaking news around the NFL. Today, we found out that the Miami Dolphins have gone fined a 2023 first-round pick, a 2024 third round pick, and their president owner, Stephen Ross, is suspended until October 17, I think it was. And he got fined about $1.5 million. All of this comes on the back of the NFL's investigation into Brian Flores's, he called them out, basically. I believe it was a lawsuit because he had said that Stephen Ross kind of forced him into tanking in certain seasons. And there was also an investigation into the Dolphins tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. Surprisingly, the NFL kind of said that Stephen Ross didn't, force the team to tank. But they essentially admitted that he, kind of directed towards it. He gave some nods towards, maybe we should probably tank. They admitted that, but the Dolphins liable for that, which was interesting. They did find them liable for the Tom Brady and Sean Payton stuff, which, the Tom Brady stuff was happening literally every season since the end
for
of
like three
time.
Seasons. Yeah, right? It was crazy. Yeah, but go on. Sorry.
No. Yeah, I was about to finish up there. But yeah, I think it was 19 season, 20 season, and even the 21 season, the Dolphins were always in contact with him. They were clearly tampering, which you cannot do because he was under contract with both the Patriots and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then the same thing happened with Sean Payton, where they wanted to bring him in, but they didn't get any sort of clearance from the New Orleans Saints, which they still had him under contract. So They clearly did not read the rule book on this, and they got fined pretty heavily. It was a pretty harsh punishment, I would say, losing a first rounder, although they always have first round picks, but losing the first rounder and then a third rounder is pretty, you know, it does hurt their future a little bit there.
Yeah, it's weird because somebody put out a list of the teams that had multiple first round picks this year, and the Dolphins had two, one theirs and then the 49ers pick. And, you know, I don't know if the 49ers are going to go, you know, deep in the playoffs or whatever. They have a tough division and they're going to start a rookie quarterback, and there's bumps that come with that most times. I mean, he's not a rookie quarterback, I guess I should say, like a guy who's never started before in Trey Lance. But it kind of takes them out, unless they're just terrible this year. Like, it kind of takes them out of being in the mix for one of those guys that, you know, the C.J. Strouds or the Bryce Youngs or, I mean, Will Levis, you know, if you're a big mayonnaise guy, like, you know, any of those guys seem like they have the, I don't even know if pedigree, but tools is probably the right word. They have the tools to potentially be a top five sort of pick in this draft, which, you know, we didn't have last year. So it takes them out of the mix for that. And it sort of like glues them to Tua for the long term, because, you know, for better or worse, you know, Tyreek Hill is yelling from the mountaintops that Tua is his favorite player ever and he loves Tua and all this. You know, after 8 games, is that still the same? I don't know. But at this point, like, I don't think they're going to have the, you know, ammunition to go up and get a quarterback if they want to. So this is a pretty, you know, a pretty big deal, even though, like, you know, we've talked about how first round picks, like if you're talking about trading them or whatever, like until they become players, they're just, their value is all kind of meaningless. But this represents a real like loss of opportunity. Like, they just won't have that opportunity this year. Having said that, like, you know, that's aggravating. Like, the league has been over backwards to try to make it as legal as possible to tamper. And if you're not even going to like adhere to those small rules, then, you know, what are we doing? So I'm kind of glad he got nailed on that. And I tweeted this today, but it's funny how the whole Brian Flores lawsuit was kind of hearsay until Bill Belichick got caught with that text message where he sent congratulations to Brian Flores. And it, like, then he was like, whoops, I meant to send that to Brian Daboll however that happened. And basically, like, that series of events, like that, like, smoking gun text message, that a decision had already been made before, like, I don't remember the exact context, but like, that was something that was like accelerant on the fire. And then that text message going public in this lawsuit basically was the first domino in what eventually led his division rival Miami Dolphins to lose a first and a third round pick. So, you know, he's a evil mastermind, and there's no way he did that by accident. Like, that, you know, I don't know if he could have predicted what was going to happen, but that was not an accident to get everybody in trouble there, especially after they messed with Tom Brady. So that's its own, like, little microcosm of the story that's not getting talked about a lot, but I think is really funny. The other thing is, I don't understand finding millionaires or billionaires or people in charge of billion-dollar teams, finding them $1 million. If you're really trying to do something, find the organization and take it out of their cap space. Like, that's how you make this hurt, because it hurts the team and it is a public mark that says, you know, this is why you don't have enough cap space to sign this guy, is because your owner, you know, was trying to tank, and he was, although I guess he wasn't really convicted, quote unquote, of that, but the gist of it is your owner screwed you over. So if you've got a problem with it, it's not our fault y'all don't have enough cap room. Take it up with that guy, because he broke our rules. So those numbers always seem tacked on to me. Like, my understanding is that you can actually write those off as, don't know if you can write them off as a donation or whatever, but since the NFL is a nonprofit and since all that money is supposedly goes to like charitable organizations, like I don't know how the tax break situation works there, but I think it's something really shady and weird. But all that to say, you know, the Dolphins broke the rules and they did it blatantly for, you know, half a decade. So, you know, the other shoe finally dropped, and it does suck for them because this was the first season in forever where they had some small amount of hope that they were going to go to the playoffs since Tannehill left. So, you know, it's got to be tough for them. But, you know, luckily Miami's a nice place to live.
It is. I can confirm that as I live there. I think the Dolphins are going to be pretty good this year, but I do agree that it feels like they're tied to Tua now. You know, this actually hurts them a lot more than I guess initially I realized, especially when you take into account the fact that they just haven't even attempted to find competition or a successor to Tua. And now you don't have a first-round pick next year if Tua completely blows up this year. And Mike McDaniel can't make it work with him when they have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Chase Edmonds, Mike Gesicki. I mean, that's a real indictment on Tua, and you're going to have to look for a quarterback, and I don't really know what their options are going to be. So, yeah, that does hurt them. And I agree about the finding billionaires thing. It's just it's ridiculous. It's like finding me, you know, $100, you know, it's the same type of equivalent. And I agree. I think it would make a lot of sense to take it out of their cap space. I think that would have hurt them a lot more, especially now that they, you know, just paid Tyreek Hill this huge contract. That would really put them up against the ropes. But, you know, the NFL doesn't really, they don't care. Like the fine for Stephen Ross is just something to make it seem like they care a little bit. They don't. Like, I really don't think they do. So, yeah. And the other big news, obviously, since the last time we recorded this podcast, this happened on Monday. Deshaun Watson got, quote unquote, suspended 6 games. Just I don't even know what to say about this. It's just disgusting. It honestly disgusting. I think is the only word I could really come up with. The fact that Calvin Ridley gets a whole season for placing a parlay bet while he was sitting at home. Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson, who has I can't even count the number of civil suits that have been brought up against him, with a clear pattern of, you know, mistreating masseuses, mistreating women. And he gets 6 games. I mean, there's still the possibility that the NFL appeals this and maybe gets a more harsh punishment. I don't exactly know what the specific process for that is, but I saw that. We already knew it was coming just because the rumors had already started popping up. But this was at least a year suspension that he deserved. And I mean, I've seen some people pointing to the fact that he sat out all of last year. That was not a suspension. That wasn't a suspension. He was getting fully paid to do it. The Texans were absolutely awful. He essentially just got a free year off while getting paid. That was not, you know, one of those things where like an NCAA team sits out the postseason or like sits out March Madness as a postseason ban, like a de facto ban. Like that, this is not what that was. And he should have gotten way more, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, the reason he sat out is because he had demanded a trade from the Texans before. Like, it would be like a player who was holding out found a way to get a year of their contract done. Because if you don't play by week 12 or something, then your contract doesn't toll and, like, you owe the team money back. So, basically, he got rewarded for getting in trouble because he didn't have to play for a team he didn't want to play for anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of issues with this. Mina Kimes, I think, had a really good like take on this where she read over what the judge said and what the judge, how the judge's summation of the case and what happened and what she found and what was proven by the NFL. All those things pointed to the fact that Deshaun Watson was guilty, like had been, you know, had sexually assaulted these people, you know, I don't know the definition. I mean, I know the definition, but I'm not sure if it's classified as assault or harassment. So, it, you know, at the very least, sexually harassed these people. And
he, I mean, technically, they said Robinson, the person who was like handling this,
yeah,
said that they found Watson guilty of violating the lease personal conduct policy in three ways. One of them was by engaging in sexual assault. Like they legitimately said it was sexual assault.
Yeah. And then they,
cause it's get up six to, games for that.
I've seen people point to the fact that the only other time that the league has suspended somebody for sexual assault or sexual harassment was the Ben Roethlisberger thing. And he got six games, and that she basically said, yeah, he's guilty, but there's no framework for me to, this is a generous interpretation of what she said, is there's no framework for me to punish him more. So, you know, I'm recommending the full suspension of what y'all gave Ben Roethlisberger 10 years ago, but, you know, only because there's not a system for me to give him more. My understanding of the appeals process is the NFL could just this could be wrong, but by everything I've heard, it seems like the NFL could just say, no, thank you. Like, we're going to appeal. And in this scenario, we appeal to ourselves and Roger Goodell gets to make the decision you appeal beyond that. And it's for some reason, it just goes directly into Goodell's hand and he can decide what to do. Now, after that, I think the NFLPA or whoever can have a different lawsuit that, you know, Browns fans say the league doesn't want that because then all their skeletons in the closet will get revealed and all that kind of stuff. I don't know enough about what could come out in a countersuit or whatever, but my understanding is that the judge did as little as she possibly could. Because she wanted to put this back on the NFL because she's bad at her job is probably the best way to interpret it. And she can't interpret beyond the only past, you know, punishment they have. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the excuse. Like, should he be out of the league completely forever? I don't know. I mean, he's not been convicted of anything in court. So for you know, in an actual like legal proceeding, so I don't know. Like I can't say whether like he should do that or not because, you know, innocent until proven guilty or whatever. Having said that, it seems like there's enough evidence to convict him of some things, and it seems like there's a pretty clear money trail from the Texans and whoever to kind of like cover this up that, I mean, maybe he wouldn't get fully prosecuted for all of those, but he's done enough bad things and he's put himself in enough suspect situations that he is clearly, you know, a bad guy. And you know, he should, you know, every snap he takes in the league is just going to be another reason for people to hate the NFL. And, you know, I get it. Like he should not play this year at the very least, and he should be suspended indefinitely until he figures out all his lawsuits and all of that so that he can say, okay, in the eyes of the law, nobody is saying I'm doing anything anymore. And then you can begrudgingly decide to let him back in or whatever. But I mean, I don't know how you look at him play and you think anything other than, you know, of everything he's accused of doing and has unabashedly said, yeah, I didn't do that. They're all liars in his press conference. No matter how much people try to say, oh, well, you know, he showed remorse. It's like, no, he didn't. Like he said, they're liars. I didn't do that. That's his quote unquote remorse. But that's probably all we need to talk about this, because I don't think there are a lot of Deshaun Watson defenders out there. So I think we're just kind of preaching to the choir on how he should be punished as much as possible. And hopefully by the time you're listening to this, Roger Goodell has decided to appeal or whatever, and then he's made a stronger ruling.
Yeah, we really don't have to talk too much more about it. All I'll say is I'm going to be cheering so hard against the Browns and Deshaun Watson when he's on the field. That's the only thing I'll say about that. Also, is there like someone that right now you hate more than Deshaun Watson? Like, I just want to see him do poorly. I mean, maybe that's a bad taste. Yeah, Jim Irsay is pretty bad. Pretty bad, yeah.
but like, not, I mean, obviously not on the same level, but it's so rare that one team can knock your favorite team out of the playoffs, you know, and they, and they're now the good guys. Like, it's like, you know, we always will hate the Steelers and the Ravens just because that's the, you know, the team, the franchise history. But the Bengals, I didn't particularly have a problem with, even though we haven't had great success against them. But, you know, they knock you out of the playoffs and you're like, well, I kind of hate them a little bit now. And now all of a sudden I want all three of those teams to beat everything out of the Browns every time they play them. So, you know, that's a quick, you know, face turn by all of those guys every weekend that they get to play the Browns. But it's just aggravating.
Yeah, at the very least should make for some intriguing storylines towards the end of the season. So we're going to take a quick ad break here, and we're going to come back and talk about the first week of Titans training camp. Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. So as I mentioned quickly at the beginning of this episode, the Titans have gotten a lot of positive reports out of training camp. I think this is probably one of the more positive starts that we've gotten. Really not a whole lot of players that, you know, are injured or limited. And a lot of players seem to be doing very well. Some of them we talked about a little bit about last week, because it seems like the rookies have gotten off to a really quick start, which doesn't usually happen under Mike Vrabel. And it definitely hasn't happened with the past couple of draft classes, but everything has been really positive. And thankfully, Treylon Burks last week just got off to a torrid start, kind of showing off the insane talent that he has. He had a really good media scrum session. I think it was after his first practice, maybe a second one, can't really remember. But he took full accountability for, you know, coming in out of shape and not really getting himself prepared in the way he needed to for rookie OTAs. I just loved that accountability. And then he started showing it on the field. He was making fantastic athletic catches. He was looking quick. He was looking much more in shape and looking like the Treylon Burks that we saw at Arkansas, you know, that college dominator that we are expecting to come in and play right away, because the Titans need him. They need a receiver of his caliber, and they need that contribution from their first round pick, which they haven't gotten the past couple of seasons. So yeah, I mean, that was super, super good to see. And I know, Will, you were probably thrilled with it, because, you know, you've kind of been banging the drum for him all off season. And we did it last week. We were like, just calm down. Let's wait until he actually gets on the field. And it looks like at least the conditioning aspect has somewhat been resolved pretty early on.
Yeah, like conditioning very clearly is not an issue. Like, maybe it was earlier in that, you know, maybe it was a mix of asthma and conditioning or whatever. But it, not only is he, you know, consistently showing up in one-on-ones and individual stuff, he's, you know, as far as I can tell, he works with the first team and the second team. Like today, for example, they had the first team during team drills at the end of practice, got done early, and there was like 20 or so minutes to where it was the second and third team was like going against each other, and Burks was in all of those, all of those for the second team. And that was after he'd already made plays with the first team in Tannehill. And so, you know, not only is he not out of shape, he's seemingly setting the tone and playing as many snaps or more snaps than any other receiver in camp. So, you know, that's one way to get respect quickly. You know, if everybody doesn't think you took it seriously and you come in and you're in, you know, in a month, you've gotten yourself in such good shape that you're basically outpacing veterans and other rookies like that. That's a pretty big deal. Oh, and he's also returning punts. So that's another thing that he's got on his plate. So it's great. You know, it's great to see. Like I liked him. I think I tweeted about him like over a year ago about how I liked him and how he fit the profile of what the Titans like. And, you know, then he went out and dominated in the SEC. I think he had half of Arkansas's receiving touchdowns, even though he didn't play in a bowl game. And like, 33% of their receptions or receiving yards, and then 40% of one. Like, he just was a huge part of their offense. And, you know, he did that as the clear focal point. And, you know, he played through getting banged up and, you know, going to Alabama and Texas A&M. Like, he was everything you want to see out of a wide receiver one prospect. So, you know, I'm glad to see him do that. The cool thing is, it's like every day it's something new. Like, the first practice, they had that deep shot where, you know, he went basically just a straight fade route, and he went and split the safety and the corner. I think it was Fulton and Molden is who he split, or Fulton and Hooker is who he split. And then, you know, that obviously is a pretty impressive combo to beat. And then the next week it was, or the next day it was, beating Roger McCreary in one-on-ones and just being super physical. Like, even though McCreary started like the physicality first, like, that was cool. And then after that, it was, you know, an intermediate pass that he took for a long way. And then it was, oh, he would have had another touchdown in that practice if Jeffrey Simmons and SWAT went down. Then it's this and that. And then we've gotten to the point now where even when they're playing 7-on-7 or they're doing red zone drills, he's like lining up at running back in the backfield, and they're throwing him wheel routes or Texas routes over Cunningham. So that, you know, and like Zach Cunningham, like, not like, you know, Chance Campbell or like a rookie or whatever, like Zach Cunningham, who we all saw was pretty good. And, you know, it's not like he got mixed up on who he's supposed to cover. Like, that he's just out there making back-to-back touchdowns, lining up wherever. So he's kind of everything you want him to be. And so much so that they've put him with the first team offense a fair bit now. And you can just see when Jim White does the breakdowns or whoever, it's always a run play that kind of works, a pass to somebody else, and then a big pass to Burks. It's like, consistently, like, the third or fourth thing you read, it's hard to go through one of those training camp reports without his name popping up once every third or fourth time for making a big catch against either a high pick or a guy who has been to the Pro Bowl or should be in the Pro Bowl. So, I mean, it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I mean, we really shouldn't be too surprised. I mean, he showed this in college. He's a stud. Like, I think we could say that, like, just physically and with his talent, whenever he's on the field, he looks like he's going to be a stud. And honestly, at this point, I'm expecting a similar rookie season to AJ Brown, where he's probably not going to get, you know, fed targets all that much, but when he does get the ball, he's going to make plays with it, and he's going to be very efficient. I don't know if he's going to, you know, get 20 yards per reception like AJ Brown did that rookie year, but I could definitely see, you know, 15 to 16 yards per reception, break a lot of big plays, especially on those, you know, routes over the middle that this offense, passing offense, is pretty much based on, you know, play action and then throw it to your athletic big receiver over the middle, let him, you know, run after the catch, make plays, break tackles. And that's exactly what Burks can do. But he's also shown, at least early on in camp, that he can do other things. He could get vertical. He could catch jump balls. So, yeah, super exciting. It seems like they're all the receivers really have been doing pretty well. I think that's a case of it being camp. You know, you get a lot of one-on-one situations. And it's easy to make the receivers look good. I mean, Racy McMath is getting a lot of praise today after Tuesday's practice. I don't know how much stock to take into that, but I saw a couple of clips with Des Fitzpatrick also. He looks like he's cleaned up some things, and he even had an interview after one of the practices, and they kind of asked him about Robert Woods, and he was just glowing praise about his leadership, how he's helping him out, helping out all the receivers. Ryan Tannehill had a lot of similar comments. And then you see reports, you know, or tweets that he's staying after practice. He's always the last one to leave the field, always working. He's already ditched the brace, so he's ready to go. He's healthy. And he just seems like, you know, the whole package, like everything that the Titans needed, probably in Julio Jones, because I'm not going to say that Julio Jones wasn't a leader, but I feel like I didn't really see too many reports of him taking players under his wing. And maybe that was, you know, a reason being that that happened was probably because he was, you know, probably always in the trainer's room. He was always injured and really just couldn't do anything for the team and the players around him. So that was frustrating, I'm sure, for him just as much as the Titans and the fans. But it seems like Robert Woods is going to come in, and he already has, and be a real focal point for the offense and be a real mentor for some of these younger guys at receiver.
Yeah, receiver looks a lot stronger than I thought it was going to. You know, you talked about how it's training camp and, you know, it's easy for the receivers to look good. I don't know. Like, we've had a lot of training camps where receivers have not looked good. I mean, like, there's very rarely a time where it feels like the offense strings together win after win, even when the defense isn't great. Like, now you've got the defense, which, you know, is great. Like, I mean, like, this defense will be a top 10 unit and probably will be a top 5 unit when it's all said and done. But, you know, they lost, quote unquote, on Monday. And then on Tuesday, they came out and, you know, the offense immediately rebounded. And they're doing it without Derrick Henry. And they're doing it without a lot of deception being available, because when Derrick Henry's not in and you're going against Haskins and, you know, not that, you know, nothing against Haskins, but he's not Derrick Henry, and you've got Munyer at center half the time, like, you're probably fine. Like, it's like you probably don't have to respect the run a good bit. You know, you can cheat a little bit. So, you know, it's not like the defense is resting a bunch of guys or anything like that. Like, the offense is just doing well. Like, you talked about Woods' leadership. That's a big buzzword this year. Like, there's, you know, we've seen people talk about Tannehill's leadership. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina does a really good job speaking up for Tannehill, because he's the guy who, really the only guy on the roster who's been in those meetings and who can say, you know, Tannehill is the same leader that he always is, but maybe turned up a notch this year because it's been such an emphasis, but he's always led like this. And now that he's under the microscope, people notice that, you know, Tannehill's pulling guys aside, and when they've got a break, they're not just like kicking back and, you know, joking around or anything like that. Like, he's pulling Hooper and Woods over, and then they've got young guys with them sometimes, or they've got other, you know, potential starters, and they're over on the sideline doing things, like, constantly working. So, you know, all that's all great. Like, I'm not going to speak necessarily to Julio, because I think part of Julio's problem was he didn't have a chance to grow and develop a relationship with any of these guys, because he wasn't on the field in training camp. And then he didn't practice a lot during the season. And when he did practice, it was always somebody different beside him, because AJ Brown couldn't stay on there. And Reynolds was off the team by halfway through the year. Like, you know, who was he supposed to attach to in terms of other wide receivers? 'Cause they were never in the same place. So yeah, like, this team, this offense especially, seems more cohesive. It seems like the fact that Treylon Burks is doing so well and Woods is doing so well and Hooper is doing so well that the defense can't just say, okay, you know, we're simulating 3rd and 7. They're going to pass it to AJ because Ferkser's not going to beat us. And, you know, Swaim's not, you know, they can't just say, okay, all we have to do is really try to focus on this, where the ball is going here. Like, being able to distribute the ball to these different pass catchers is really helping the offense. And it's already clear, even though, you know, we haven't seen clips of, you know, team drills, like, it's so evident in how everybody's developing and how everybody's talking about the offense, whether you're talking to Jeffrey Simmons or hearing Vrabel talk or listening to Tannehill. Like, it just feels different right now.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, sometimes it's just as easy as having your first two receivers being healthy, because they are most talented guys, obviously, and they could win in several different ways. I mean, think about 2 years ago when AJ Brown and Corey Davis were on the field together. They were both healthy. They were crushing. They were crushing every single defense because defenses just couldn't stop Corey Davis, or they couldn't stop A.J. Brown. They had to either pick their poison. And then you just went to the other guy, and he beat his guy pretty much every time. And we weren't able to have that last year because Julio was constantly injured. And so was A.J. Brown, too. So the fact that Woods and Burks have come in so strong at the start of training camp, they both are healthy, they both are in shape, and they're looking just as advertised, I think that's already a huge step in the right direction after the offense was really poor at times last year, the passing offense at least. I think that's a really good step in the right direction heading into this season. And sticking with some of the pass catchers, we want to talk a little bit about Kyle Phillips and Chigakonkwo. We did talk about them last week and kind of gave our expectations, but they've come right in, and they're already getting reps with the starters, with the first-team offense. Do you think they're going to play a little bit earlier than maybe we were expecting, or is this kind of what you expected, given that they're kind of – they're polished. They were polished prospects coming out, and they kind of had specific roles that I think the coaching staff maybe envisioned for them.
It's weird, right? Because historically, John Robinson's been really good at finding players on day three and even day two, really. But like day three, he's really thrived finding stuff where people can't. But he's always, like, you go back and look, he's always kind of tried to find people who can do a little bit of everything, right? It's like Crookshank was, a defensive back who could do a little bit of everything. Hooker, same way. He played corner, but he was going to be safety. And, Tajay Sharpe earlier in his career. Like, there's guys like that littered throughout that process. You know, David Long was a guy that was like special teams, and he's, athletic enough. Jayon Brown, the same way. All those guys who, nobody in the NFL finds those guys better than John Robinson, but it was different this year because Kyle Phillips is not going to play X. Like, he's not going to play Z. Like, he's a slot receiver. And maybe in some packages you can have him lined up outside just for mismatch reasons, but he is one of those undersized, quote unquote, slot wide receivers. And the Titans haven't really had that other than Humphreys, who, was fine, but was nothing, exceptional. But it looks different when he's out there. Like, you see him run against defensive backs and just they've got no chance. And even when they pass interfere him, he's catching the ball. And so all the things that he did in college are translating, and that's interesting. But rarely have we seen people go from, okay, that's really good winning one-on-ones, to you're doing so good that Mike Vrabel is going to allow you, as a rookie who hadn't proven himself on special teams, to go into actual starting team drills. And today, on Tuesday, when we're recording, Kyle Phillips got reps with the first team for the first time all training camp. And for reference, A.J. Brown didn't get reps with the ones. He did maybe towards the very end, but he had a hamstring injury that messed up his progress. And he also, one of the big reasons why he had such a good rookie year is because he had so much experience with Tannehill from when they were both second stringers. Like, I believe that he didn't practice against, I'm pretty sure it was the Patriots that year when they played him in training camp. Like, he didn't practice against them. And it was Corey Davis who was making all the plays, and it was Corey Davis who was getting all the shine. And then the first game of the season, A.J. Brown gets 100 yards on four catches, and then, a new era begins. But, it wasn't like he was given a bunch of opportunities. He just happened to make the most of his opportunities. Right now, it looks like not only Kyle Phillips, who got first-team reps, but Chigakonkwo are going to get serious snaps with the starters. Like, Okonkwo has been somebody that the coaches have loved forever, but you figured when the pads come on and he's, fastest height in the draft, he's not a mountain of a man, but he's not, he's not little, but like, he's not Austin Hooper. Like, Austin Hooper walks around, looks like a tank's walking around. Like, and nothing against Okonkwo, he's just not necessarily built like that. So you figure maybe he sits behind Swaim for a while, and maybe he's like an optional tight end. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure that he doesn't out-snap Swain to start the season. Like, he apparently is, you know, beloved by everybody. Like, Tannehill, like, literally Tannehill was talking about him the other day in a press conference, and he just started smiling and was talking about, you know, he's so impressive, he's this and he's that. And then they talked to Todd Downing, and he said the same thing, where he was praising him up and down, and Vrabel's praised him, and, you know, Tim Kelly's been working with the tight ends more than any other position group. In fact, I think he's like 90% with the tight ends. And if you're a tight end and you're working basically right underneath the guy who's coordinating the pass game, and you're thriving every time they throw you a pass, I would imagine that's going to spark some ideas for him to make you a real weapon as a rookie. So for the first time, really ever, it looks like there are going to be multiple rookies that are going to start or play significant snaps. And I mean, it's crazy, because you could sell me on the idea of, you know, Okonkwo being a starter if they go two tight ends. I don't think Phillips is there yet, but I think he might be a situational guy, because I think that's because another rookie is going to start ahead of him when they start Burks. And they start him opposite Woods, and they start Nick Westbrook-Cakina out there too. So all of these rookies look good. And, you know, you talk about them in OTAs and minicamp, and it's like, yeah, okay. You talk about them early in training camp, it's like, yeah, okay, that's still kind of just conditioning. But as they're installing more and more of the offense, and as they're doing more and more physical stuff in pads, they're pulling away from everybody else. They're not getting sucked back towards the pack. Like, they stand out more and more and more. So I don't remember a time where we've seen that with Mike Vrabel as the head coach, even in 2019 when they had such a fantastic class, or even in Jack Conklin and Derrick Henry's rookie season, where they had plenty of guys who were, you know, future all pros or future, you know, Kevin Byard was in that class, but those guys weren't pulling away from the pack like these are. So, it's very encouraging, I guess, is the most modest way to say it.
Yeah, and we haven't even gotten to Roger McCreary, who was a talking point also, just because he's got so much praise as well. But just to kind of put a button on the Phillips and Okonkwo thing, I think at a certain point, Mike Vrabel could, you know, hate playing rookies all he wants. At a certain point, you have to play the best guys and the guys who are going to give you the best chance to win. And Okonkwo was just too athletic, and you could do too much with him. And Kyle Phillips looks like an incredible route runner already in camp. And at a certain point, you just got to play these guys. And especially considering the fact that Todd Downing came under so much fire last year, I don't think Vrabel could take the chance of not putting his best players out there. So hopefully maybe this is a turning point in Mike Vrabel's philosophy in terms of giving too much playing time to rookies, but I hope it is. And, you know, another rookie who I don't know how much I feel like McCreary might, I don't know if he's going to start from the get-go, just because Molden played really well last year. He was one of our better defensive backs. And I think he's earned the right to be the starting slot corner, but man, the reports from McCreary have been glowing, really. I mean, the other day, I think he had a bunch of pass deflections in camp. He's been going toe to toe. Sick. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, when you think about it, it's really not ridiculous, because this is what he does. Like, this is what he did at Auburn. This is what he did when he played against Alabama, when he played against some of the best college teams in the nation. He just stuck with his guys. He was a sticky coverage corner, and he just gets past deflections. Like, he doesn't let anybody catch the ball on him, and it is translated already. Shane Bowen has already said that he doesn't play like a rookie. He's very poised. It's nothing new. Like, I think we all kind of saw that. We were maybe a little bit skeptical about his overall ceiling, just because he's not the most, you know, athletic, rangy type of cornerback. But I mean, he could play from day one, and I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by the moment at all.
He's the kind of guy who I could see the Titans just changing their entire base defense. Like they at this point, they played so much dime last year. Like they played more dime than anybody else in the NFL. I mean, they could just say dime is our new base package. Like McCreary's too good. Molden's too good. You know, we've got Farley on one side, Fulton on the other, Hooker and Byard. Like we've got enough, you know, hitting power in David Long and Cunningham to feel comfortable with that, you know, with these other guys, the defensive backs and their ability to like play the run. But I mean, if you want to run, cool. Good luck going through Autry and Simmons and Tart and Naquan Jones and Walker, who they apparently love now, and Harold Landry and Bud Dupree. And you know, just these like this really big and versatile front. It's like, okay, like if you want to try to run on us, our base is going to be Danico Autry, Tier Tart, Jeffrey Simmons, and Harold Landry. And then when we think you're going light, we're going to bring Bud Dupree in. And if you decide to pass, that's great, because you know, Simmons had 11 sacks last year when you include the playoffs, and Landry had something like 13 and a half or 14 when you include the playoffs. Like, I mean, they can do anything you want them to do. And now you've got these guys in the back who are so physical, but also so technically sound. It's like, I could see them doing a lot of dime, and I could see them being excited to do it. Like they love Chris Jackson too. I mean, like that, you know, he stepped up in that Rams game where he had to come in and play. And then I don't know, like I think they love this group that they have. And Molden being hurt with the rolled ankle or whatever it is, like we haven't gotten, you know, obviously you're not getting anything out of Vrabel in terms of injuries, but we've gotten no indication that it's something serious, but we've also gotten no indication that he's coming back tomorrow either. So, I mean, he played more than almost any other rookie last year. Maybe more than any rookie last year, now that I'm thinking about it. But I don't expect them to need him to be on like on the field all the time. But with how well McCreary's playing, like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to see McCreary doing everything that he's doing now and not starting. But it's also hard for me to find a corner to take out of the lineup. So, I mean, if it's not Molden, I don't know what they do other than run a lot of dime. But it's a good problem to have. Like, it's good to be too talented at one of the most expensive and important positions on the field.
All I could do right now is imagine a dime defense with Danico Autry, Simmons, Bud Dupree, Harold Landry on the line. And you could even play with one linebacker, just put David Long there. How is any passing offense going to do anything against that? Or if you want to put Cunningham in there, play with two linebackers, you just have Simmons, Autry, and Landry getting after it. They could do it by themselves. They don't need a lot of help to get to the quarterback. I mean, you could do a lot of things with the defensive talent that's on the team. It's exciting. Like, I don't see many scenarios where the Titans defense regresses. I really don't at all.
They seem like, you know, I touched on Walker a second ago, like Jeffrey Simmons came out and was like, we love him. He's great. He's going to be like a huge impact player for us. Like I'm pulling up the depth chart now just to see all their, like where they are on their two deep, like their backups. So not even their starters are, DeMarcus Walker, Naquan Jones, either Danico Autry or Bud Dupree, depending on who you want to line up there, and then just defensive tackle, whoever you want, like whether they like one of the young guys or whether they want Kevin Strong to play there or whatever. Like, I mean, that's a pretty, like, maybe they play DeMarcus Walker at defensive tackle and let Ola Adeyemi play. So you have Ola Adeyemi, Bud Dupree, Naquan Jones, and DeMarcus Walker. Like, that's, we've seen a lot of Titans defenses where that would be better than the line that they had to field. Like, legitimately, like, with how much they rotate their defensive linemen and their wide receivers, you have to have some depth at those positions because the Titans just don't believe in having those guys play a ton of snaps. But I mean, I didn't even talk about Weaver. Like, Rashad Weaver would be on that list too.
I was about to bring him up. I was like, he could play on the line if he wants, or he could play standing up. There's so many options for Shane Bowen. It's crazy, honestly.
Yeah, it's it, you know, to have so many good backups, and you know, we'll see how the 53 shakes out, but it's like I think the offense is going to get shortchanged a little bit, because I think they're going to have guys like Corey Levin, I think, makes the team because he can play center and guard, and they'll be comfortable with that. I think you'll have to have a lot of swing guys. Like, I think Torrey Carter is going to be really important, because I think they're going to try to figure out if they can use him some at tight end. Like, I don't, like, maybe not as a true tight end, but as a wing or something, but they've got to find ways to open up spaces for some of these guys. And like, they've just got so much talent. I mean, even then, like, I think Fitzpatrick probably doesn't make the roster, because I don't think he can play special teams, and I don't think he necessarily has the top end upside. But I mean, he could go back to the practice squad knowing that he's the first guy off the bench, you know, quote unquote, on the practice squad, and he could be comfortable with that. But it's like, a week ago, it seemed like Fitzpatrick was, you know, not a lock, but like one of the guys who had pole position. And now it's just like, the defense is so good and the wide receivers are so competitive that all of a sudden it looks crazy to think about adding somebody like Will Fuller, or, I mean, anybody else at wide receiver or any position other than maybe offensive line, because it's just like everybody's shown out at different times. And, you know, there's a gold standard on this team, and it's Jeffrey Simmons. So, and I guess Kevin Byard too, but the fact that those guys are not necessarily getting beaten, but the fact that they're not just overwhelmingly like dominating everybody they're going against means that you can kind of judge the rest of the group and say, okay, you know, Aaron Brewer's not a complete liability against Jeffrey Simmons, or else we would see a bunch of tweets about that. You know, Raiden's, it has yet to be talked about as somebody not being able to hold the edge, which is good, like, because that would be something that they would love to talk about. Like, all these things, the lack of information on some of the, you know, the lack of, well, nobody can stop that guy, is important, because we know that there are some empirically dominant people in this team. So all that to say, you know, don't talk yourself out of getting excited about what you're seeing in training camp, because a lot of these things will translate. Like, at the very least, it's people on the field, instead of talking about, well, you know, when Julio comes back, it probably won't take him long to adapt and he'll probably be good. It's like, okay, probably, but these guys are doing well now against guys that are Pro Bowl / all pro players. So it's all, I mean, very impressive, and it's genuinely exciting for the first time in, I don't know, like 3 or so. I mean, I don't know when the last time I was excited to watch preseason like this, because maybe last year it was like, you know, Weaver's interesting, then there were some other competitive guys, but it's like, I'm going to have to rewatch the preseason games multiple times just to see every position that I want to see.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this first week of training camp has already gotten me pretty excited, to be honest, especially on some of these rookies. We're kind of running out of time, so we're not going to touch on too many other players. There really hasn't been too many negative reports, really, and even Tannehill apparently has been fantastic. I think he hasn't thrown an interception yet in camp, if that's what I read correctly.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of praising him, how he's going about everything, how he's kind of gotten over the playoff loss a little bit, put it in the rearview mirror, and is kind of just back to, you know, being that assassin that we know he could be. So that's good news. I think the only real negative thing that has come out as of late was Jamarco Jones getting in a scuffle with Taylor Lewan. I don't think it means anything. He said it's just the boys going at it. And we know Lewan likes to get under people's skin, especially, you know, a new tight end that's probably going to play right next to him. So
yeah,
nothing, I mean, to worry about there.
It's also like one of Vrabel's chosen people. Like, it's an Ohio State guy, Malvin, you know, I'm guessing he was Malvin back, with a Michigan guy in Lewan, because, I mean, Jamarco Jones went to Ohio State and was recruited by Vrabel and all that kind of stuff. So it could be that he felt like he wasn't getting the opportunities, or it could be that he said something. He and Lewan have been chirping at each other for a while, and now that Jamarco Jones isn't like getting reps with the ones, you know, reportedly, that, you know, maybe he's a little bit, maybe he's not having as much fun chirping back and forth with LaJuan as he was when it was OTAs and Brewer was in a yellow jersey and wasn't allowed to really practice and all that. Like, it might be a little bit less fun and a little bit more sensitive, and it might have gotten out of hand. But yeah, if training camp fights and, you know, where does Laurel Murchison fall on the roster? Like, if those are your big storylines, that's awesome. Like that's I'll take that every day of the week.
Yeah, agreed. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're kind of going to come back and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. All right, welcome back in. We're going to go ahead and do Stop the Nonsense. Will, do you care to go first?
Yeah, so there's you can pick any number of people talking about it, but people keep talking about how Malik Willis is going to end up as the quarterback two, and how Logan Woodside's going to get cut, and this, that, and the other. My Stop the Nonsense is this whole idea that they're even having a competition. Like, everybody needs to understand that this narrative that people keep trying to argue that, you know, can Willis beat out Woodside? It doesn't matter. Like, there is no competition there. Willis is basically getting a redshirt year, and by all accounts, he should be getting a redshirt year. Like, he's got the tools to be exciting, but I think I said it last week. I mean, I think it's a 50-50 shot that he's the starter next year. Like, I think he's got a lot of hurdles that he has to clear to get there, and if Tannehill's playing well, they'll stick with Tannehill until Tannehill retires. Like, I mean, Mike Vrabel and John Robinson are not going to get rid of a quarterback who's won them that many games, especially when you have to think about, you know, Derrick Henry eventually needing to be, like, you know, replaced or moved on from. Not this year and probably not next year, but, like, eventually you have to think about that, and you want stability as many places as you can get. They're going to carry three quarterbacks. Like, if you're putting out a 53-man roster and you don't have them with three quarterbacks, you're probably wrong. You know, it's going to be those three guys because they love what Woodside does in the quarterback room. They love how much he studies. You know, maybe they cut him with a wink, wink understanding of, we're going to put you on the practice squad and we're going to protect, you know, keep you protected. And then if somebody comes sniffing around in the middle of the season and we don't have a spot for you because there's an injury somewhere else, then we'll, you know, we'll figure something out. But expect those three to be the quarterbacks on the roster in some shape or form. Like, stop worrying about what Willis is doing. Be excited when he comes in the third quarter or the second quarter of preseason games, and just enjoy the flashes you get then, and, you know, live to argue this case another day, because it's just that battle is not going on.
Completely agree. Like, if you're getting excited about seeing Malik Willis in the regular season this season, just give it up. It's probably not going to happen unless, yeah, you know, there's an unfortunate injury that we're not going to talk about and we're not going to hope for. But yeah, it's just not happening. I mean, there was even a clip the other day where Woodside and Malik Willis were doing like a very simple like rollout pass. And I mean, Woodside he looked better because Malik Willis is still learning, you know, like he has a lot to go in his development process. By all accounts, it's going well, but it's going to take time. He's not going to be ready for the foreseeable future. I'm going to go ahead, wrap up with my Stop the Nonsense. Kyler Murray, the situation has been, it's been something. It's definitely been something. I don't even know how to go about explaining this. But anyway, Kyler Murray signs his huge contract extension immediately after he signs it. I think maybe the day after or even the day of, it comes out that Ian Rappaport said that he did some digging and found it. I think Kyler Murray's agent just leaked it to make the Cardinals look bad and get rid of it. It was an quote unquote independent study clause that said that Kyler Murray had to commit 4 hours per week. Will corrected me on this. I thought it was 4 hours per day That I thought was a little ridiculous. You know, I think that's too much. I don't think you need to be devoting that much time. But I mean, 4 hours per week really wasn't too much. Regardless, the clause was funny. I found it kind of hilarious that you need to put that in the contract for your franchise quarterback and you don't trust him enough to do that on his own. Why, if you have to do that, why are you even giving him, you know, $47 million per year? I think that's kind of an indictment on Kyler and maybe his work ethic. And that's how it came across after it got leaked and everyone picked it up and everyone started making fun of the Cardinals. They got rid of it. They scratched it from the contract. I don't even know how that's possible when he already signed it. Like he saw that already. He signed the contract. And then just because they were facing backlash, the Cardinals get rid of it. I don't know what to say about this other than the Cardinals have extremely bad energy going on right now. Like Cliff Kingsbury, I think he got an extension for some reason. I don't think he's a very smart coach. They really haven't done much with him. Him and Kyler together have really fallen off towards the end of the past few seasons. Their GM has kind of made some weird decisions. They've got bad vibes written all over them. I don't know how it's going to go for them, but it doesn't seem good.
Yeah, the whole thing is very weird, and it kind of got lost in this whole like all the other stuff that's been going on, and it kind of got like weekend news dumped and barely got talked about. I mean, it felt like it got talked about a ton, but at this point, we've already kind of gotten over it because of all the other stuff. But yeah, it truly an insane reaction to a reasonable like request.
Yeah, I mean, 4 hours per day. I legitimately thought it was 4 hours per day.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you do 45 minutes a day, you're basically done by like Friday. Like it's like you can do 45 minutes a day and take a day off. And still do, and he doesn't have to do it during the bye week. He doesn't have to do it in the off season. So basically 17 weeks a year, he has to do like, he has to pull a 4 hour work week in terms of like doing homework. Like, I don't know, just do 3 hours kind of haphazardly on a Monday and then like 15 minutes every now. Like, it just seems so easy to do for like 18 weeks, but apparently not that easy.
Yeah, all it would have taken was him putting on some film in the background while he does whatever he wants to do, but that was too much. I did find the memes hilarious, the ones of saying that when Call of Duty comes out in October, November, we're just not going to see Kyler. So yeah. That was funny. That was hilarious. So thank you for that, Arizona Cardinals, for giving us some entertainment during the week. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back probably next week to recap some more training camp stuff. Maybe recap the Hall of Fame game, which is going to be so exciting for Will at least. Woo! And then we're going to do a preview of the first Titans preseason game. We don't know who's going to play really, but we're going to go ahead and do that next week. As always, stop the nonsense.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.